Hello, this is Atta Durakant with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, Power of Your Hope. Gala touts community leaders and Lieutenant Governor Stratton's surprise speaker. This article is by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Bobby Jelks has been a coach in Decatur for 34 years. His mentor was Ida Brooks, and on Saturday he was honored at the Black History Gala with the award bearing her name, Ida Brooks Coach of the Year. "I've sent I don't know how many kids to college," Jelks said. "As long as God keeps me around, and I've got breath, and I've got my health, I'm going to continue to send kids to college." He had no intention of going into teaching and coaching when he graduated college, he said, but Brooks told him kids needed to see black men in those roles, and she convinced him. The Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce and the Black Chamber of Commerce of Illinois sponsored the 8th annual gala on Saturday at the Decatur Conference Center, honoring 15 community leaders whose contributions have been significant. Marcia Taylor and Gregory Gaddison had never attended the Black History Gala before Saturday. "I just wanted to see what it was all about," Taylor said. The Black Chamber was founded in 2004 by Anthony Corey Walker, who served as president until he assumed leadership of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Illinois, when he handed the reins of the Decatur organization to Tamara Fuller, who still leads it today. The Chamber's purpose is to support the growth and sustainability of African American businesses and entrepreneurs. "One way to do that," Walker said, "is to provide access to young people who might one day be those community leaders and entrepreneurs." And with that aim in mind, he had invited several to the event, including Jada Walker, who welcomed attendees. "We're happy to see you all here, and we hope you have the best time ever," said Jada, who will turn 11 in May. Now, who's ready to get this party started? Master of Ceremonies Sean Streety, who has been with WAND-TV for 31 years, called the event incredible. "I know it's so important, especially in this time, and any time, really, to recognize all the achievements, all the work that goes on in our community to make our lives and make this place we call home better, and I'm so happy to be a part of that," he said. Stratton shares her story. The event included surprise guest Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. She is the first black Lieutenant Governor of Illinois and is seeking to replace Dick Durbin in the U.S. Senate. She is joined on the Democratic primary ballot by Representative Robin Kelly of Linwood and Representative Raja Krishnamurthy of Schaumburg. "Though we celebrate Black History 365 days of the year, it is so wonderful to be gathered here on this last day of the 100th anniversary of Black History Month," Stratton said. "I always appreciate the opportunity to recognize just how far we've come. We also know that black history did not just start 100 years ago. See, we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, our foremothers and forefathers, and for me, for so many of us in this room, black history is my family's story." Her great-great-grandfather, William Stevens, was born enslaved, she said, and received a plot of land after the Emancipation Proclamation that is now Stephenville, Mississippi. Her paternal grandfather was a handyman with a sixth-grade education, and her grandmother cleaned houses and had an eighth-grade education, but they emphasized the importance of education to their nine children. Stratton's mother was a teacher, and her father was a doctor and Navy veteran who marched from Selma to Montgomery in 1965 with Martin Luther King Jr. And now their daughter, first a Sunday school teacher, then a lawyer, then a state representative, and now Illinois' first black lieutenant governor, is running for United States Senate, Stratton said, as the audience applauded. You see, that is the power of education. It is the power of access to opportunity, and it is the power of your vote, and it is the power of your hope. It's why we can't let them erase our history, and we certainly can't stay silent while our rights are under attack. You know, when voting, my dad marched for, when my dad marched for voting rights, he didn't know what the outcome would be, but he knew he wanted to stand up and be counted. Honorees describe their life's purpose. Entertainer of the Year, Aroun Wilder Bey, a boxing standout who grew up in Decatur, brought his championship belt with him to the podium, where he told those in attendance that they did not have to wait for someone else to give them an opportunity. They can go out and make their own opportunities. Quoting Louis Farrakhan, Bey said, "The two most important days in your life are the day that you were born and the day you find out the reason you were born." For Latea Pender, that reason was teaching. She's been with the Robertson Charter School for 16 years, and the announcement of her award was greeted with cheers from friends and supporters in the audience. To be recognized at this Black History Gala, an event that celebrates legacy, resilience, and excellence, means more than I can put into words, she said. Education has been my life's work for more than two decades. She said she shares the honor with every student and family who trusted her, the teachers who collaborated with her, and the mentors who poured into me along the way. I believe deeply in creating learning environments that are equitable, creative, and connected to real-world academic experiences, she said. The Salvation Army's Director of Community and Athletic Ministries, Jaquay Owens, called Quay by friends and colleagues, was the winner of the Ezra West Social Action Award. "I've lived on the West Coast," he said, "and I tell them all where I'm from. I'm not from Chicago, I'm from Decatur. Decatur is more than a city. It's a legacy built on history and on people who do some good. When we remember that history, we understand the power of our own voice." Paulette Smith, affectionately known as Dog Catcher, served as a Macon County Animal Control Warden for 41 years. Now retired, she is a security guard at the Devon Lakeside Amphitheater and is the recipient of the Roger Walker Law Enforcement Award, named for the late former sheriff. She, too, was greeted with cheers and applause and had brought a dog puppet, which she displayed with a grin and a chuckle and had it bark into the microphone. The Excellence in Healthcare Award recipient is Christelle Wheeler, a family nurse practitioner at Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois. For her, she said, healthcare is about the patient. No matter how tired, stressed, or worried about their own personal issues they are, healthcare professionals have to put their entire energy and focus on the well-being of the people they serve. It requires compassion, she said. It requires genuine empathy and a collaborative approach to treatment and planning. It requires us to give 100%, 110% at all times to our patients. Whether we're tired or we're frustrated, or whether we hurt, when we walk in the door, we take care of our patients. We leave it at the door. Possibly the most lively award recipient was Jaywan Boatman, first ever recipient of the Rising Star Award, which he quipped they could rename the Check on Your People Award, as that's what he's known for on social media. Boatman, who recently assumed his grandmother's surname as his own, was previously known as Jaywan Young, kept the audience laughing as he described his mother's strict discipline, thanked his family and pastor for their guidance. Youth, he said, has not stopped him from discovering his purpose. Some people are still trying to figure out life at 24, he said. Some people are still trying to figure out who they are at 24. And here I am standing before you as the first recipient of this Rising Star Award. That's God, folks. The evening concluded with a welcome for the Decatur Public School District's international teachers who have come to the district from the countries all over the world through an exchange program to help fill teacher vacancies. And some color photos here, a very large color photo. International teachers pose for a picture with Anthony Corey Walker and Tamara Fuller during the Black History Gala on Saturday, February 28th. And it's three rows, first row seated and two rows standing. Very large attendance in the photo. Scott Perry photos, Herald and Review. Smaller color photo, Thomas Walker prepares to a to-go plate for Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who made an appearance Saturday, February 28th at the Black History Gala. Stratton, who is running for a seat in the U.S. Senate, took a moment to share her family story and mingled with some in the crowd before the awards portion of the event got underway. And the picture is taken from behind the hot restaurant trays and looking at the attendees at Walker and Stratton and others behind as well. In the photo that leads off the article, Bobby Jelks addresses the crowd at the Black History Gala on Saturday, February 28th, after receiving his Ida Brooks Coach of the Year award. Jelks was one of 15 award recipients honored during the event, hosted by the Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. And the photo is taken from a neat angle. It's taken from the very front of some cardboard letters that are hollowed in the center but have the ridges outlined with illuminated bulbs on the inside, and black history is shown going left to right, and it's taken from the B and looking up toward the podium and the stage where Jelks is speaking. Scott Perry, Herald and Review, photo credit. And here's a list of the Black History Gala honorees: Anna Waters Education Award, Latea Pender, Ida Brooks Coach of the Year, Bobby Jelks, William Oliver Male Politician, Jonathan Williams Organization of the Year, World Service Enterprise, Entertainer of the Year, Aron Wilder Bay, Horace Livingston Writers Award, Ricardo Cortez Cruz, Ezra West Social Action Award, Quay Owens, Roger Walker Law Enforcement Award, Paulette Smith, Corey Walker Founders Award, Santrell Carson, Ray Shaw Business of the Year Award, D-Town Customs, Betsy Stockard Female Politician Award, Consuelo Cruz, Excellence in Healthcare Award, Christelle Wheeler, Rising Star Award, Jaywan Boatman, Jill Woodley Shaw Hairstylist of the Year, LaShawn Fields, and Trailblazer of the Year, Dr. Bradley E. Harrison, DDS. Still on the main front page, Middle East, U.S., Israel attacks on Iran intensify. Tehran, its allies, hit back as their security chief snubs negotiations. It's articles by John Gambrell, Melanie Lidman, and Sami Magdi, Associated Press, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. The war in the Middle East spiraled further Monday as Israel and the U.S. pounded Iran. Tehran and its allies hit back against Israel, neighboring Gulf states, and targets critical to the world's production of oil and natural gas. The intensity of the attacks, the killing of Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and the lack of an apparent exit plan set the stage for a prolonged conflict with far-reaching consequences. Safe havens in the Mideast like Dubai have seen incoming fire. Hundreds of thousands of airline passengers are stranded around the globe. Oil prices shot up, and U.S. allies pledged to help stop Iranian missiles and drones. U.S. President Donald Trump said the Iran operations are likely to last 4 to 5 weeks, but that he's prepared to go far longer than that. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth didn't give specifics Monday when asked about the ultimate goals of the operation, how long it might last, or what success would look like, claiming doing so would disadvantage U.S. forces. Iran long threatened, if attacked, to drag the region into total war, including targeting Israel, the Gulf Arab states, and the flow of crude oil crucial for global energy markets. All of these came under attack on Monday. The chaos of the conflict became apparent when the U.S. military said Kuwait mistakenly shot down three American F-15E Strike Eagles, while Iran attacked with aircraft, ballistic missiles, and drones. U.S. Central Command said all six pilots ejected safely and are in stable condition. The Gulf state of Qatar, meanwhile, said its Air Force shot down two Iranian Sukhoi Su-24 bombers. Israel and the U.S. bombed Iranian missile sites and targeted its navy, claiming to have destroyed its headquarters and multiple warships. As several airstrikes hit Iran's capital of Tehran, the top security official, Ali Larijani, vowed on social media, "We will not negotiate with the United States." The death toll grew on all sides. The Iranian Red Crescent Society and the U.S.-Israel operation, said the U.S.-Israeli operation killed at least 555 people. In Israel, where several locations were hit by Iranian missiles, 11 people were killed. The Iranian-backed Hezbollah militant group also targeted Israel, which responded with strikes on Lebanon, killing more than 24 people. Meanwhile, 4 American troops were killed, and 3 people were reported killed in the United Arab Emirates and 1 each in Kuwait and Bahrain. Iran expands attacks. With world markets already rattled by the fighting, Qatar Energy said it would stop its production of liquefied natural gas, taking one of the world's top suppliers off the market. It offered no timeline for restoring its production. European natural gas prices surged by 40% in response. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia's Ras Tanura oil refinery came under attack from drones, with defenses downing the incoming aircraft, a military spokesman told the state-run Saudi press agency. The refinery has a capacity of more than 500,000 barrels of crude oil a day. Nuclear site targeted. Reza Najafi, Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency, told reporters airstrikes targeted the Natanz nuclear enrichment site on Sunday. Their justification that Iran wants to develop nuclear weapons is simply a big lie, he said. Israel and the U.S. have not acknowledged the strikes at the site, which the U.S. bombed in the 12-day war between Iran and Israel in June. Israel claimed it targeted the leadership and nuclear infrastructure. Iran claimed it hasn't enriched uranium since June, though it maintained its right to do so while saying its nuclear program is entirely peaceful. Iran's government news outlet said Monday that Tehran's Golestan Palace, a UNESCO-listed heritage site, was damaged in U.S.-Israeli strikes on Sunday. Hezbollah fires on Israel. Hezbollah said it fired missiles on Israel early Monday in response to Khamenei's killing and repeated Israeli aggressions. It was the first time in more than a year that the militant group claimed an attack. There were no reports of injuries or damage. Israel retaliated with strikes on Lebanon, killing at least 31 people and wounding 149 others, according to Lebanon's health ministry. Associated Press journalists in Beirut were jolted awake by loud explosions that shook buildings and shattered windows. Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir, the Israeli Army Chief of Staff, said the military would not end its offensive against Hezbollah before the threat from Lebanon is eliminated. We will end this campaign with not just Iran being struck, but with Hezbollah suffering a devastating blow, he said. Rescue services in Israel said several locations were hit by Iranian missiles, including Jerusalem and a synagogue in Beit Shemesh. So far, 11 people were killed. No clear exit. The U.S. military said B-2 stealth bombers struck Iran's ballistic missiles facilities with 2,000-pound bombs. Trump said on social media that 9 Iranian warships were sunk and that the Iranian Navy's headquarters had been largely destroyed. Hegseth, along with Air Force General Dan Kane, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, held the Trump administration's first news briefing since Saturday's strikes. Hegseth claimed the operation had a clear, devastating, decisive mission to eliminate the threat of Iranian ballistic missiles, destroy the country's navy, and ensure no nukes. No stupid rules of engagement, no nation-building quagmire, no democracy-building exercise, no politically correct wars. We fight to win, and we don't waste our time or lives, Hegseth said. Trump administration officials, including Hegseth and Kane on Monday, didn't offer any exit plan as the killing of Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei cast doubt on the future of the Islamic Republic and hurtled the region into broader instability. And there is a medium-sized color photo. A plume of smoke rises Monday after a strike in Tehran, Iran. Photo credit, Mohsen Ghanji, Associated Press. Education. New Decatur superintendent ready for day one. This article is by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools new superintendent Nicole Moody knew she wanted to be a teacher when she was a child. I was that child who lined up my stuffed toys and my Barbie dolls and did school, Moody said with a chuckle. I brought all my old papers home and marked up the pages. I loved school and emulated my teachers and just loved everything about it. She never wavered from that goal, and when it was time to apply to colleges, she had only one in mind, Illinois State University, which is known for its teacher training program. Her mother urged her to apply to some other colleges too, but Moody was adamant and she was accepted. She loved her time there, she said, and it was the right choice. She taught first grade for 4 years and in her fifth year moved to administration, working for the Illinois State Board of Education. That job allowed her to travel around the state and familiarize herself with a variety of districts, giving her a wider perspective on education practices and what works and what doesn't. She worked with the legislature on education bills. But that position was mainly office work and she missed dealing directly with students. She returned home to Springfield to work as a principal at a charter school and spent some time as a principal in a charter school in St. Louis. Eventually, she became an assistant superintendent of teaching, learning, and school culture in Springfield Public Schools, where she is now. Our school culture is all of our social and emotional support for our students, as well as adult support with mental health and just health in general, she said of her role there. COVID caused some difficulties for both students and adults with shutdowns, keeping people at home and making the adjustment when returning to in-person learning and work hasn't always been easy. That's the work I began to do when someone else retired, she said. I was drawn to that work, particularly after COVID, knowing that us just focusing on education was not enough. And we've known that for a long time, yet COVID and the needs that came after COVID were way more than academics. It was, what do we do to help get not only our children, but our adults back to school, knowing the great stressors of the day, the social emotional impact, the behavioral impact, the social emotional wellness, just focusing on teaching and learning was not going to be enough. Fostering a sense of belonging, making the environment warm and inviting, is a big piece of culture, she said, and learning to do things differently when what used to work no longer does is important, she said. She is looking forward to getting to know her new community as she makes plans to move her family to Decatur, which includes her husband Jackson and 6 children, 2 in elementary school, 2 in middle school, and 2 in high school. The children, she said, have already begun looking online for houses for sale after they got over the first dismay at having to leave their friends in Springfield. Moody is anxious to strengthen partnerships among the community and the district working together. Clearly, as a leader, I know I won't be able to do it alone, she said. It takes a team. It will be our district team, but it will also be a community. Our school is a reflection of our community, so if we don't get connected with the community, we're not fully understanding our children. We're not fully understanding our families. Another priority is the Roadmap 2030 strategic plan, which is underway now and will set the tone for the next several years. Moody plans to be part of the development of that plan, figuring out what's going well and what needs to be improved. Springfield Schools has done something similar, and it's still underway, so she is familiar with that process already. I don't need to come in with my own agenda, she said. There's already one here, so me understanding that, understanding what's working, well, with that, we may need leadership, may need some support to get the ball rolling, will be my role. She knows there are buildings with low academic achievement, and she said, the school improvement program process is a process, not something accomplished overnight. The key is supporting the staff as they work through that process, making sure they have what they need from the central office, tackling issues through strong teaching methods and celebrating even small wins along the way. I won't be coming in with a silver bullet or any kind of magic, she said. That school improvement is quality teaching and consistent instructional practice, and what that takes from district leadership to school leadership is to be on the same page about instructional practices that we're going to prioritize. What that is going to look like inside our classrooms and how our principal's going to lead it. What are the instructional coaches going to do, and how district leadership is going to support those educators so they can do the work. We'll wrap up. Well, there is an article on the weather page, B8, and it says, Apollo rocks shed light on moon's magnetic field. New samples to be collected for comparison. Marcia Dunn, Associated Press, from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Lunar rocks collected by Apollo astronauts more than half a century ago are providing a fresh take on the moon's mysterious magnetic field, scientists say. Samples to be retrieved by future moonwalkers in NASA's new Artemis program should yield even more clues. Four Artemis astronauts are expected to fly around the moon in a crucial test flight blasting off as early as April from Kennedy Space Center after weeks of delays. The study released last week by University of Oxford researchers in England suggests that while the moon's magnetic field has been weak during most of its existence, it strengthened and even exceeded Earth's magnetic activity during extremely brief periods 3 billion to 4 billion years ago. Their findings appear in the journal Nature Geoscience. Magnetic fields help to shield against dangerous cosmic rays, and in the case of Earth, the sun's harsh radiation as well. The moon had incredibly short spikes in high magnetic field strength lasting no more than 5,000 years and possibly as short as a few decades, the result of melting titanium-rich rocks deep within the moon, said lead author Claire Nichols. Scientists previously theorized that the lunar magnetic field remained strong for long stretches based on their analysis of rocks fetched by Apollo moonwalkers from 1969 through 1972. With Artemis astronauts exploring the moon's south polar region instead of the low latitude lava plains of Apollo days, the new samples should shed even more light on the moon's ancient magnetism. Nichols and her team pored over earlier measurements of the Apollo samples and found that high titanium levels corresponded with preserved traces of high magnetic activity, rocks from the first and last moon landings. Apollo 11 and Apollo 17 were loaded with titanium. We have found a missing link, Nichols said in an email. Magnetic field activity can be intermittently really strong and may fluctuate far more than we have traditionally thought. The researchers consider the Apollo samples not representative of what's found on the moon because they came from similar locales where titanium abounded. After being shoved to the surface through volcanic eruptions, future Artemis astronauts plan to study ancient rocks near the South Pole, where permanently shadowed craters are thought to contain water ice. Understanding the history of the moon's magnetic shield is critical for thinking about planetary habitability, Nichols said. And there is a small color photo here. A full moon is seen shining over NASA's Space Launch System and Orion spacecraft atop the mobile launcher in the early hours of February 1st at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Sam Lott, NASA, via AP photo credit. And with that, we have come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.